Good morning. Today I've got Warren Snow from Envision New Zealand Limited in the studio. And Warren is an environmental and local development consultant. And he works with his group here in Auckland. And they work with public, private and community sector clients to develop initiatives that strengthen community, protect natural resources and encourage local enterprises. So, good morning, Warren.
Hi there. How are you doing?
Very well, thank you, Warren. Warren, could you tell me now what you're doing in sort of Greater Auckland or in New Zealand with extending your vision of being able to get in and develop and implement leading-edge strategies of sustainability?
Okay, well, I guess I've been trying to understand what sustainability is since I sold a business when I was much younger, and I've gone down many paths in that pursuit, as I think a lot of other people have, and I've finally felt that the best way for me to be effective would be to try and create a business that could do this work and try to create income from doing it and then use the income to do the work that nobody will fund. So we're using our own company to fund projects that there's no real customers for. And we have a criteria for the jobs we do. It has to meet our criteria that it has a local economic development or a local sustainability element to it, and that it obviously brings in a little bit of income. Sometimes it's not very much, but it is enabling us to create that platform to do that other work as well.
Yes, well, it's an awkward one there when you're working basically at the coal face. It's not like you can go and buy a whole lot of land and sit on it and then capitalise on the capital in the next rush or bubble.
Well, that's right, and that's the problem, I think, with our society, is that all the incentives are in the wrong place. If you do that, you can become a very rich person. And everybody respects, you know, people tend to respect wealth. So if you do that, you become a very rich person, you're respected. And yet, I don't know why we call it land development, because it's really destruction of natural resources. I was reading, I watched a video you might have seen at the end of Suburbia, and they were saying how interesting it is that in America, all the big new fancy gated communities and suburbs are given names like Oak Creek and Deer Park, and they're named after the things they've actually destroyed.
I agree.
They're no longer there.
Same in Australia.
Yeah. Yes. So we're really interested in the sprawl subject. Mm. We work in the area of waste, environmental technologies. We've helped several environmental technologies to move towards, you know, commercialization, getting investment and so on. But we're also really interested in that subject of sprawl. And funnily enough, if I could just read you something I brought along with me, the national government, this is the national government in 1975, and people tend to forget, not that I'm pro-national necessarily, or I'm not sitting here being pro or against, but that the original conservatives, that's why they had that name, it's about conserving. Yeah. And funnily enough, when I was going around the country talking to councils about zero waste, quite often it was some of the older conservatives who really supported that radical notion because they believed in saving resources. So I've learned that all the stereotypes about left and right and
ahead, yes,
progressive and regressive, they're not really important these days. Yes. You know, it's we have sustainability ultimately is the only path we can take to live within nature's guidelines or nature's boundaries, if you like, and it doesn't matter what religion, what political persuasion, ultimately everybody has to cut a path to that unknown place that we all call sustainability. But anyway, the national government, with a picture of Mr. Muldoon on the front, and had the 1975 National Party Manifesto, 75 cents, a guide to what the next national government will do for New Zealand. And they said that land will be considered a national resource. Soil, water and air are the prime elements of life. If we are to protect and improve the life we live, then we must protect and improve these also. And that we will ensure that the urban sprawl of the cities is halted, thus preventing the further loss of agricultural and coastal land.
Yes, I know. Things change quickly. don't they? And I know that the Republican Party is the same. Once they used to always want to take care of their big spreads, and they wanted stands of trees to remain there. But unfortunately, this newfound idea of exploiting the situation now before somebody else does.
Well, there's this sort of creep, market creep. I mean, I believe in the market because, you see, if you go to the market, it's a very vibrant, lovely thing to do and to be. And see, this word market still has warm, deep inside us, fuzzy feelings of the market when we think of the market in the town centre. But the market now is a huge global thing with tentacles all over. And it's so illogical. The market never saved anything, unless it was in the interest of the market to do so. So we have to temper our belief in the market, which I do believe in, and relative competition. But the market now is delivering the environment up on a plate, if you like, for investors who often have no relationship to that resource they are investing in the exploitation of. It's so disconnected. But just on that theme, Tim, I've been sort of starting to look at all the government policies, just a few of them, and trying to, I want to bring them all together over the last 20 or 30, 40 years. And what you find is very enlightened manifestos about the environment. For example, in 1999, the Labor government said that it would establish a waste reduction working party. They would fund it by a modest landfill levy to be collected by the owners of all landfills. Now, almost every country in Europe now has a landfill levy. That's on to help fund the recycling programs. And yet that hasn't happened. The New Zealand First National Party Coalition had a one as well. So I guess what I'm finding is that there's some phenomena happening there where they can make these promises and something is stopping it happening.
Once upon a time, a manifesto was a statement that they would actually hold fast to. Now they just flick them off. As soon as they get into power, they just ignore the manifesto. And I somehow feel that it's important there that we, the people, have to again make them accountable because solely they're our servants. And to be perfectly frank, I think we need to put them under a contract. If we had all MPs under a contract and lock them down, that's the only way we can follow through.
And I mean, there's a lot of talk about binding citizens and, you know, referenda. That would be also, I think, a very important...
Well, that's right, which, of course, Don Brash has recently come forward and said, yes, I'm interested in... Which is very important because I know that Winston Peters and Christine Fletcher were at a function here just before Christmas, I think it was August last year or something like that, where they put forward the idea. And there is a large group in New Zealand who want these referenda. And so, again, politicians are our servants, so we need to follow it through.
But if you're talking about the sustainability thing, Tim, I feel that New Zealand has not only moved away from sustainability, we've actually put the and say sustainability is a cliff that you're going to go over. You know what I mean? You know, or non-sustainability. We've actually put the accelerator on towards the cliff. We haven't only stopped heading there and taken the handbrake off. We put the accelerator on, and our resources are being exploited far more.
Sold off. Yes.
The ability of ordinary people to buy homes. Small businesses in towns all over New Zealand are going under, the traditional ones. Farms are being pushed at absolute maximum levels, erosion. I mean, our whole resource base is being depleted, and we're, for the first time, we're starting to look at now serious depletion, that where we've depleted our soils. What Europe took 2,000 years to do, we've done in a couple of hundred years. A report recently on that. Children, the advertising and marketing industries are targeting children younger and younger. There was a conference in Auckland on how to market to children, and the theme of it was exploiting the nag factor. I don't know how we've got to this situation.
That's right. And see now, program here is solution-oriented. It's going to be a big one for us to be able to pull everything together. I want to bring it out in sort of debate in the community. And in America, of course, they used to have town town meetings, that's or town right. hall meetings.
Yes,
and,
yes.
and we haven't really got on board with that one. We're not necessarily a verbal society who wants to articulate things, or we're so become so complacent, or as Pink Floyd said many, many years ago, comfortably numb.
Yes.
That we think, oh, we'll just let it happen somewhere else and let somebody else do
quite,
the work.
Quite right. And, you know, on many indicators, we are, you know, teenage pregnancy, gambling, we're about the second in the world. I'm not quite sure about some statistics I was looking at recently.
Yes.
We're very high up in gambling. And the pokies, the casinos, absolutely stripping people of their lives, you know. And these things are highly marketed. We're one of the most marketed countries in the world. We have more ads on television than most countries. Marketing is in hyper marketing and hyper material flows and waste and consumerism. They're all linked and sprawl. You see, material flows resulting in waste, consumerism, marketing, sprawl, they're all intimately linked. And the way finance works, so that people are working harder and harder. We're amongst the most hardworking people in the world now because we're all working so hard for our massive debt we've accumulated on our credit cards, the industry we've created in investing in residential property, which is meaning that the poor are buying more second, third, and fourth, and fifth houses for the wealthy. It's very, very... something's not working, and I don't know what it is about this country that's gone this way.
It was a very innovative country, this country. And, I mean, we've set so many good, high standards previously. Ethics, I feel, is something now that, again, has to come back through. And I know it's coming back through the Sustainable Business Network. But if we go for the big picture... If our planet is seen, like Buckminster Fuller used to see it, as a spaceship.
Yes.
So if we see the spaceship there, then we have to make sure that the ventilation system is working. We want to make sure that the water is not polluted, that the waste on the ship is dealt to in an appropriate way.
That's right.
And I feel here that we have to use this analogy time and time again, even though a spaceship sounds very metallic. I like the idea of an organic side of it. And some people say, okay, well, look, it's not only a spaceship, it's a mothership. From her, all things issued.
That's right.
And so what we've got at the moment, of course, is we've got crew who are basically involved in internecine fighting. I mean, we've got so much in the way of different power plays going on. I mean, to the degree there that you have certain officers on the ship who are wanting to take control over it. I mean, some people say that there's pirates on board the ship.
Yes. Well, there are. I mean, you look at the debt that people are getting into with their credit cards, and
yes,
I mean,
yes,
it's a huge problem,
yes,
and that's just sort of a piracy.
Well, it is. I mean, I was looking at sort of drugs and arms, etc.,
yes,
as well as all the other distortions. However, we have to see our planet as a closed system, and as you said, the more product that you've got, the more you spread out, and the more you spread out, so you're okay, that section's not big enough. So you need to get the next section, and you have to buy out the next person. Well, this is the important issue. Of course, we have a closed system. Our planet is a closed system. And so, again, we have to find people who have not gone AWOL. Our crew members, essentially, absent without leave. And if we can actually waken them to the fact there that we have got a destination, and there are future crew, not yet born, who are waiting, a destination, which we would like to feel is going to be one of more than sustainability. I want people to be able to have what I've experienced.
Imagine then, if thinking about the crew that are coming on, it's one of those little stories you hear from time to time about the Indian tribe that never made a decision without thinking of the impact of seven generations. But you see, we hear these little nutshells or little anecdotes, but imagine if you actually did apply that in your life and you said, everything I do, I'm going to think of seven generations. And it sounds romantic and nice, but what an amazing change that could bring about.
I agree. It's, of course, how the media markets things, you're not successful unless you have things.
Well, the whole machine, sorry, but the whole machine, the industrial machine, you see, after the Second World War, the huge capacity that was built up in particularly America, the war economy, the industrialists who owned the companies that made all the war machine wanted to turn that to, you know, they were making big money, they had no, their income was going to drop with the war stopping, and so they turned it to production of products for people, washing machines and fridges and all the gadgetry and so on. And the problem is they had a population who were accustomed to quality and did not like the idea of just changing something. They expected a fridge to last in their lifetime or a washing machine to last in their lifetime or even a car. So they actually had to bring in the idea of planned obsolescence.
That's right.
And not only planned obsolescence in terms of the product, but in terms of people's thinking, so that you could, they actually put in product death dates and so on, and they started getting to people to think of a colour change and a fashion change, and they put a huge amount of effort into re-educating the American public, who were actually very frugal people before the Second World War, largely.
Into
being wasteful. And, of course, there's a wonderful book by Vance Packard called The Wastemakers. And then he picked up on the link between waste and the marketing industry. And the he wrote another book called The Hidden Persuaders. I don't know if you've ever heard of those two books, The Wastemakers and The Hidden Persuaders by Vance Packard. Mm. Wonderful early books about those sorts of issues.
Yes, to be able to find ways like this. A special day, isn't it? No buying day.
Buy nothing day.
Yes.
I feel that doesn't quite get it right though. Because if you want to buy something that's sustainable and local, you want to buy. Why not buy?
I agree.
Yeah.
I feel there that through frustration,
these things get put.
That's right.
Mm.
That's right. Yes. Well, I know that I think Matt Ridley in year 2000 produced a book called I think it was on the human genome, or and he said they're just like the human body. When you get to 50, it starts to break down, and you find all sorts of peculiarities happen there. And he said they're just they had researchers go in, investigators into all the old car yards and check out all the cars to look at what had been wasted, what had not broken down on the cars. And then when they had found that there are parts on the car that were still had a couple of years more use in them, they took the knowledge back to the car factories and they recalibrated everything so that it all essentially break down together.
Yes. Well, they spent enormous amounts of money at Bendix getting buttons that would only go so long, and the rest of the washing machine might be perfectly okay. And that was in the Wastemakers. Oh, it's just incredible.
Yes. Well, you see, again, there has to be citizens-initiated, not only referendums, but laws enacted there that says, right, if you're going to get a car, there has to be a guarantee that this car will last so many thousand miles or kilometres, that this fridge will last so many thousand or 100,000 hours, etc. And it's only by the people doing it, and we've got to do it fast because the corporations are getting too much power.
Right. And also, just before you get on the corporation, but also so that fridge and that car can be completely disintegrated, disassembled.
Yes.
And you will have, hopefully, I believe, disassembly factories. Well, Fisher & Paykel do have a disassembly factory for old washing machines and fridges, and that's a very good example. It's a world model of a company that is actually now making products that it will take back at the end of their life and disassemble. So that's one reason to support that local industry.
Too right. Fisher & Paykel,
Yes, exactly.
Good on you.
And so they've done that, and they've got, it's a wonderful education seeing that. So, you know, you want not only to get things to last, but you want to educate people to buy things that last and to buy quality. But that's very hard when you have this absolute vast landslide of junk coming in through stores and which has got no meaning at all. And people are just, I mean, you see children now with, you know, 100 fluffy dolls.
That's right.
All made in sweatshops in China. And I can absolutely assure people that most of the stuff like that is made in what we would call inhumane working conditions. In spite of all the spin, lots of reports have shown that, and I have a friend that's making a movie called Made in China, and he's told me about the conditions. And so here we are, you know, creating all these cheap goods at the expense of people that are slogging their lives away and getting ill and sick with the lack of, you know, health and safety issues and lack of good wages to make us stuff that we don't even need. We're throwing it in landfills. It's clogging our landfills up.
Yes, well, this reminds me of Spaceship Earth. Well, this is the Roman galley. You've got somebody walking up there with a whip, making sure that the rowers work and row as fast as they can.
Yeah.
And they're basically slaves.
But the market says that's smart. And maybe it's old-fashioned. Maybe it's altruistic. But why shouldn't we think of, you know, if anyone in New Zealand had the sorts of people working in the sorts of conditions next to their house, like in a house next door, they'd ring the police. In fact, there was a woman that had was convicted of running a sweatshop in Auckland. Yet the sweatshops in Asia, not all of them, some people are running things very well. I know of a factory in China, at least one that I know of personally, that has run very well and fairly. But it is absolutely the exception. And we are sitting back and turning a blind eye to absolute deprivation and inhumane conditions. It's like buying products off Industrial Revolution England, where they had the children working. We would call out, and you know, people would be shocked if we were to buy off factories in England like that.
That's right.
But it's hidden away in Asia.
Yes. Well, I mean, it can just go on and on and on. So, tell me, Warren, some of the more potent things that are happening. You would have heard of, say, some good examples,
yes,
like the Fisher and Paykel there. Can you tell our audience there some of the good things possibly that are happening not only in the world markets but also here in New Zealand?
Okay, well, I think that the thing that is that are positive are that all over the country there are local people working in groups to protect habitat, to address housing problems, local economic development problems. I mean, there's a masking effect by our very low employment. Because, and I'm sorry to get onto something negative again, but yes, there's a masking. If you see, we've got low employment, which is masked, and this is what's happened in America. America,
two or three jobs.
Well, America had doubled its economy, almost doubled it, from 5.8 to 10.2 or something like that, a trillion dollars annual, their economy, their annual, you know, GDP, from President Bush 1 to President Bush 2, and only increased jobs by 1%. So they doubled their economy, doubled the throughput of the materials probably they used up to do that, and their impact on the environment to create a very small margin of new jobs. But what that masked is the huge rise in the working poor, people that are working but can't afford to participate in society, will never own a home, that work at Walmart or McDonald's or somewhere like that, that have to eat junk food because they can't afford anything else, that are forced to live in trailer homes and be at the mercy of terrible landlords and so on. There's a wonderful book by a woman called Barbara Ehrenreich called Nickel and Dimed on not getting by in America, where she was a fairly wealthy, well, I say wealthy, just a middle-class journalist who decided to go mufti and assume a different name and try to get by on living on the wages of hotel cleaning or working in places like McDonald's and Walmart. And it's fascinating, and it just shows you that you cannot live on those incomes in America. So even though they don't show up in the unemployment statistics, what America has done is dumped a whole lot of people who were in the middle class comfortable out into what they call the working poor. And that's what we're doing in New Zealand. We're growing a working poor.
And people are doing two or three jobs.
Yeah, exactly.
During that period.
Yes. And they're living in houses. I mean, I know of lots of people, and this is absolutely a fact, that are buying houses with no money. People have already got homes. They're buying their second, third, fourth, fifth home by using the equity in the other ones to get 100% loan, and then expecting some poor family to pay the thing off.
That's right, the mortgage and the rent.
Yeah, so it's houses for free. I mean, could you ever imagine that New Zealand of, say, the 50s would ever accepted that sort of behaviour? But now we do. It's just normal. It's considered smart, and you have your housing portfolio, and you sit back, and once you've got five or six houses, you can pretty well live off it.
Yes, I've heard the story that essentially, as long as 60% of your electorate's okay, then the other 40% can basically carry the can.
Yeah.
Yes, well, look, Warren, I'd also want to be able to cover a few things there. The green dollar, this method of being able to bring in a new economy, a grassroots situation.
Yes.
I think when they had the depression in America, hundreds and hundreds of green dollar organizations flourished right out, right across all the counties, all the states in America. Can you give a little rundown on what a green dollar is?
Whenever the main currency fails the people, as in Argentina recently, collapsed and they couldn't pay their debt, and I don't know how many, but it's more than 50 local currencies have started up, because people can then trade amongst themselves, and that's actually very healthy. But I don't think it's that legal unless you do it a certain way. But the green dollar system, as I understand it, there's lots of different complementary currencies, they call them, enables people at the bottom of the heap to trade with each other. And you know, if you've got a bunch of cabbages and someone does some carpentry for you, they may not want cabbages, and so you log those units of time, and you can instead buy something else of someone else, of something else in the system.
Of nearly the equal
Yes, that's right. And you set values and units and so on, and it's a good system, although it hasn't really taken off hugely in New Zealand. But
we've got one in Invercargill.
Have we? We've got obviously Kiwi Bank, which is, you know, New Zealand owned, and lots of people in the market economy don't like that. We've got credit unions, which are becoming a little more mainstream, and PSIS, which is a public service investment, whatever it was.
And that's
now turning. It's not actually a bank; it's owned by the people who put the money in. But at the end of the day, the market economy has turned into a slushing of currency around the world, and it's becoming very destabilizing. A lot of people are looking at alternative currencies. And, you know, the mainstream economy has proven that money can go uphill, whereas in actual fact, if you put it on the ground, it can't.
That's right. We'll see, the Invercargill barter and exchange system, they have for roundhouses and homes, of course, housekeeping, gardening, painting, sewing, repairs, crafts, baking, lawn mowing, babysitting, etc. So just in a small area you can do something. And I'm sure that, again, an accountant who doesn't want to get out there and weed the garden can quickly do a deal with somebody across the fence.
To mow this, fix the car or something.
That's right. And I know there that there are, across Australia, all sorts of little groups doing this. And I just quickly went up on the net and got Invercargill there because it just popped out there, and I wasn't too sure if Tim Shadbolt had got the taken a new idea.
I don't know. But did you hear about the bank in Sweden that charges no interest and pays no interest, and it's a viable bank? And I believe it was set up years ago because the farmers went after some sort of a natural catastrophe, just could not afford to buy new seed, and went to the bank and they couldn't get money. So they decided to guarantee each other and set up this bank, which has become a very successful bank.
Yes, well, wasn't one of the principals in New Zealand not so long ago a woman?
Yes, that's right, that's right. And I don't know a lot about it, but there's a wonderful new organisation in New Zealand called the Living Economies Trust, and they used to be called a stable Money Trust, and they bought her out, and they're looking at, I guess not so much local currencies, but looking at the whole economic system and alternative systems for it, ways of managing it so that it... I guess See, in natural systems, the bigger something gets, the harder it becomes to keep growing. In other words, nature puts innate limits on all growth patterns. But in our economic system, the bigger you grow, the easier it is to keep growing. It's an anomaly.
The momentum actually pushes it forward. Well, I know some large corporations can have some disastrous policies, but just the momentum of it going forward, and people will still buy, and it takes basically a catastrophe before they realise that they shouldn't be supporting that.
But they're all predicated on growth, you see, and you know, a same state economy or a stable state economy is one that doesn't necessarily have to have growth. You know, in nature, if everything kept growing, there'd be no room for us. But we're growing. We're doing the opposite. We're growing at the expense of nature, and nature's support systems cannot continue to support our growth. So the only way that we can keep growing our corporations and New Zealand can keep growing is by depleting something or taking something from somebody else.
That's right. Well, I have mentioned previously there that they've calculated, Friends of the Earth in England did a calculation on the American economy, and worked out that if every human being wanted to actually fulfill the American dream, we would need 8 planets.
That's right.
To do this.
That's exactly right. That's the ecological footprint database that did that, yes.
That's right. And so when already we're at 120% of what this planet can
actually... more than that.
It's more than that now.
Yeah, it's more than that.
But,
you know, the economic system, if it worked... you wouldn't need philanthropy. If it worked, you wouldn't need the UK minister, which one was it? Gordon Brown, trying to create a model of relieving debt. The UK is going to relieve debt.
Yes.
And they're going to pay £100 million every year debt off for African nations. And they're focusing. That's very nice, but you wouldn't have to do it if you had what I call a self-refreshing economy. See, all systems in nature are self-refreshing.
That's right.
But in our economy, money goes uphill and it accumulates, and when it reaches there, it has to go somewhere. It can't stay there. It does no. So they have to give it back somehow. You know,
Yes, I do agree. I mean, there's trillions sitting there. Nobody knows actually where all this money goes. Once it gets up the top of a hill, it goes into some hidden.
Well, sometimes
banks.
It sometimes goes into things that really are completely unsustainable. Like, I mean, I hate to be a heretic here, but it's completely unsustainable to have a yacht race with such billions and billions and billions of resources are put into, and some of these super rich people, when they get that rich, I've heard them, one of them say, "Well, you know, when you're this rich, all you you know, whereas you and I might get our kicks from you know, growing a garden or making a transaction with a local business person, we might think that's a very enjoyable thing to do, or having a reasonably nice car or whatever. These people need to do more and more extreme things to get that same kick that we get, and so they have to, you know, Branson now has to shoot out to the moon or something, into space, or cross the channel in a car, but they have to have a lash at the America's Cup. You know, that's the ultimate badge of wealth now, is to have a
toy and get involved in a distraction.
Yeah, a yacht race.
Essentially, what it is that they're not sitting there. Grandchildren on their knee, and they're saying, well, what do you want in life? Nobody's actually prepared to lay down and look at the research that's already done to see there that we have to actually make a change.
We do have to,
and
it's undeniable. See, all the research is done, as you say, and you know, you don't see Bangladesh putting a yacht in the America's Cup. In fact, even us, even the people that participate would say, well, that's a bit off, aren't they feeding their people, you know?
Yes, well, that's right. So what else do you feel there that... Can you give another example, like the Fisher and Paykel example, Warren, because that's happening
there's lots of examples of communities that have got... Well, Christchurch is really an exemplar in terms of they've set a landfill levy, they've set up resource recovery centres, they've got stores, two big stores, they've got drop-off centres... at the transfer stations where people can drop stuff off, gets carted to these big stores called the Superstore, and they sell the materials there. So that's a great example. Kaikoura is a great example. There's lots of great examples of communities that are really doing stuff. But Raglan's a wonderful example. Recycling something like 64% of their waste in Raglan, a community group. But all the feedback from all of them is that they've reached the limit of recycling and the growth of waste
is increasing.
Is increasing again.
Yes.
Because the industrial system, if you like, let's put it, give it a name. In other words, the waste industry. When I call the waste industry the people that make the stuff and sell it, as well as the waste, the waste of people else like ourselves that do waste it, it's just churning out more and more stuff that has to be thrown away.
Okay, well, and I realise it's a hard one. What do you think that listeners can do?
Oh dear me! I just think you can start building local economies, and you do that by buying, if you can, local. Buying stuff at a market, every bit of produce you buy at a market means much more money in the dollars of the producer. When it goes through a supermarket, they're notorious the way they push suppliers around and reduce their ability to make a decent living. They can buy local. They can you just sort of got me on the spot there in a moment. But certainly buying locals is important, and obviously thinking about what you buy, obviously buying things secondhand is really important. Just basically thinking about what makes a local economy and
relationships with people too. I think if you know who you're buying stuff off. Oh, can I cut in for a sec there? I was managing an eco bread and breakfast up in Hawaii some years ago,
mm-hmm.
and I used to go down to the farmer's market, and I used to buy supplies,
yes,
all fresh fruit and
yep.
flowers, etc. And so I would set up a friendship,
yes,
basically,
right.
and I'd say, okay, is this organic or is this not organic?
That's right.
And in doing so, you actually learnt a bit how they actually produced it.
Yeah.
And then you've got invitations as a result.
Yeah.
And this is, I feel, it keeps, we've got a network back deep into the community again.
That's social glue.
Yes.
I always say, who's stripping the social glue out of our transactions? Well, it's the big chains. It's the big supermarkets. Mm. They're stripping the social glue. They're saying the lowest price is the most important thing they can possibly do, but in doing so, they're reducing the wages of the workers, and the workers themselves end up having nowhere else to buy because they can't afford to buy anywhere else but cheap, and the whole thing yes. feeds on itself.
Yes.
So, you're dead right. You've got to build those social connections, but it seems glib and easy to say, and people, but ultimately, if we're going to have a sustainable society, it has to be a lot more local than it is now.
And it looks like we just have to have government step in and act statutes there that says, right, we have to look at, we've got to get either a tax on certain things, or we have to, if you go ahead and actually do something that's positive to the environment, you get a rebate. I mean, I like the idea there that the government or the local council can give you a rebate on your waste. If you've got a rubbish man coming and picking up everything there, that if you're actually doing it yourself, or you actually get a small collective and you take care of it yourself, that you get rebates or something
like
that.
Well, that's right. In actual fact, the bag system was user pays pretty well covers that. In other words, if you don't make any waste, you don't. I put out a bag probably once a month if
yes.
I'm lucky.
Yes.
I only pay for the rubbish bag
yes.
that I use. That's,
yes.
that's actually,
yes.
frankly, that is the correct
yes.
way.
Yes.
But, this whole thing about local, I think that's going to get bigger and bigger and bigger on the agenda, because the long supply chain. See, in England, they talk now about food miles. How far is the food on your plate, from plough to plate? How far has the food travelled? And I saw an example of a meal in England where the strawberries came from California and the lettuce came from Miami and
yes,
something
yes,
came from
yes,
Barcelona, from Spain.
Yes,
and,
yes.
and yet all the things that on that plate could have been bought in England.
That's right. Produced in England.
Mm.
Yes. I think this is a very important one. It's Coles for Newcastle.
Yeah, so they're saying the food miles concept. If you can educate people to buy things in season,
yes.
reduce the food miles, because it's ridiculous to ship a lettuce by truck from Miami or from Florida to British Columbia.
Yes.
The there's too many mechanical moving parts and greenhouse gases CO2, created in doing that. Yeah. It's ridiculous to ship, frankly, a kiwi fruit by jumbo jet to London or Frankfurt. That's equally ridiculous. Mm. It's not sustainable.
Yeah. I realise that we're pushing the limits everywhere.
Mm.
And not many people prepared to stand up on this one.
Mm.
Because when you look around, where are our leaders? Where are our corporate leaders? And essentially, they're all in there think, well, I've just got a few more years here. If I keep my head down, take the money and run, and with my share portfolio, I should be able to survive.
Yes.
For through retirement, etc. So we're always going to have that, but unfortunately, the ecology is giving us signals
well,
at the moment.
Picking up on that, a lot of corporate leaders have seen that the environment is an issue, and they try to get into it over the last 10 or 15 years, and a lot have been very burnt because they realise that the way their companies are structured with the quarterly reporting regime, they can't be ethical and socially and environmentally responsible. And it's come back to bite them. Really, the economic system is structured against being environmentally and socially responsible. And a lot of corporate, international and national corporates have made claims that are just really untrue and have taken away people's belief in change. Because they've seen through it, the greenwashing, the green hijacking, whatever you like to call it. And they've also employed a lot of the change agents and given them nice jobs, sitting in the corporate, pumping out a triple bottom line report every year.
To keep them quiet.
And believe it or not, some of them are just sitting in the marketing department. So it's not even they do nothing to change the corporate structure of any consequence.
Mm.
They're just changing the colour on the corporate structure, like painting the warship green or something, you know.
Yes, that's right.
Still going to bomb someone.
Okay, well, in a closing statement, what would you say for everybody to do?
I would say learn about the proximity principle. Because in nature, if you want to sum up sustainability, and I don't know quite what sustainability, what that state will be, but the greatest number of transactions by the greatest within the shortest possible distance. In other words, if you can, sustainability is the greatest number of people having the greatest number of transactions within the short distance. Nature abides by the proximity principle.
Yes.
It doesn't cart materials from New Zealand to China or the America. There are transactions international, like the Godbrit goes from New Zealand to Siberia.
3.5 days, constantly flying, day and night.
But it doesn't cart, you know, contain loads of materials.
That's right.
You'll notice in nature that all the transactions are local, and it's called the proximity principle. So if we can just abide by the proximity principle, keep our transaction as local as possible. We're not Luddites. We still believe in trade. We still believe in sending technology backwards and forwards. But reduce the amount of materials that are being trucked and shipped and flowing around the world unnecessarily, and rebuild local economies. And let's stop, I guess, wanting so much, because we're denying, as we grow our economy and get more, we're taking it out of the mouths of people that are not getting their share. You know, imagine if everybody, just one last thing, if everybody only had X amount of fuel they could use in their life, suddenly all these SUVs would be replaced by the most fuel-efficient penny-pitching cars, you know, because we're using it up so quickly.
Yes, well, again, it comes back to the fact that we're all crew on Spaceship Earth. We should all work together and find harmonious ways. And I've actually spoken with Americans. I said, look, you know what? I'll tell you what. An aircraft carrier with 5,500 people on that the Americans have got, all these ships work very efficiently. They are all pulling together. You don't have the engineering sections fighting over with the kitchen cooks as to who's going to sell anybody what. You don't have the aviators
in competition
there with the guys in the medical facility or washing all the clothes. They actually work together as a unified whole. And somewhere along the line, our planet has to work out a system where we're not ripping off anybody else.
Mm.
And as you say, the best thing is to start at the local, right there, your next door neighbour.
Well, that's right. If you start locally and you know, try to build local economies and reduce your food miles, there are things we can do. But the thing is, it has to be a systemic thing, and we do need to elect governments that are really going to attack this problem. And New Zealand has become very wealthy in the last few years. The true impact on our environment is masked by tourism and immigration and those things. It's keeping us wealthy, but it's not a vibrant economy in the sense of what it will have to be if we're going to be sustainable.
Yes.
We're overextending nature's supply lines, and it can't carry on unless at the expense of others.
Yes, okay, well look, this whole program is based on the fact there that we want to bring to the public this debate, let them realise there that there are choices to be made, and we also have to make a commitment. And so I'd like to say thank you very much for Warren for coming in here today and telling us there that what's really happening at this cold hard edge of economics at present. We have got some huge ones, these overwhelmers, I call.
Mm-hmm.
That if the kids are wanting a future and tomorrow, well, we've got to do some. We've got to enact some major policy changes.
Yep. And anyone listening would think, well, my gosh, you know, what a wide-ranging debate. But the trouble is, you can't attack sustainability. Sure, you can do your piece. You might be specialist in energy or whatever, but it's still a whole connected approach to living.
That's and, right. Interrelationships.
And I think young people, if they... We need young people to have more dissent with what's going on at the moment, and hopefully that can happen.
Okay. Well, I thank you very much,
Warren. My pleasure.